Nothing was easy about going back to Colombia. You could hike and bleed all day and cover just a couple miles. It didn't really occur to us how dangerous it was. Four soldiers just materialized out of the bush. We're surrounded, and it's just crazy. They were gonna take me into the jungle and put a bullet in my head.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
From Wondery, this is Locked Up Abroad. I'm your host, Jim Clementi. Colombian Ambush is the story of Mark Wedevin. In 2001, Mark's a 21-year-old student at the University of Colorado. Born in Colombia, he'd been adopted by an American couple when he was a baby. Now he feels the need to go back to find his roots. He hopes it'll be an adventure that'll give his life meaning. He decides he doesn't want to go the tourist route. He wants to walk across the Darien Gap, 126 kilometers of dense jungle between Panama and Colombia. There are many dangers, including the FARC, a left-wing guerrilla army funded by drug trafficking and kidnapping operations. Mark has a romantic view of them as freedom fighters working for a better Colombia and doesn't believe in the danger. Ignoring all warnings, he and his two traveling companions begin the journey, and they're ambushed by murderous paramilitaries. They suffer harrowing consequences that, in the end, Mark can't help but feel responsible for.
I was 21. I went to the University of Colorado. I really wasn't doing very well. I wanted to leave. I was thinking about what I was going to do next. I was from Colombia. When I was very small, 2 months, I was adopted by an American couple, and it occurred to me that I should go back to Colombia. I think it's important for people that have grown up somewhere else to go back. It would be an adventure. I figured I would grow as a person, and then everything would make sense. I kind of road trip down from Colorado. That was an important part of the trip, was to really get off the tourist track. I wanted to go back to Colombia in a way that was meaningful to me. I'm not gonna fly or take a boat. It was like kung fu or something, this idea that I would be walking through Central America. I felt there was some truth to this. You can get on a road and you can take it all the way south, but it ends in Panama, that's it. But to cross into Colombia, you have to cross the Darien Gap. The Darien is kind of mythical. It's jungle for hundreds of miles. I had no idea what it would take to get across. There was any number of potential dangers there. I would talk to travelers about the Darien. People talked about drug trafficking and the guerrillas. They said, "You're crazy. It's a stupid idea.
You'll get kidnapped."
Or killed, either one.
I was a little nervous, but that certainly wasn't enough to dissuade me. I thought it was an amazing opportunity to kind of prove something myself.
Hola.
The last thing I needed before I left was a map.
Upon the Darien.
Not a lot of people ask for a map of the Darien, obviously. And I'm looking at what kind of maps are there. And this guy walks in. He goes to the same counter.
Hola, señora.
Hola. He asks about a map of the Darien.
Sí, Darien.
Darien?
This is kind of strange. And I'm just all ears. I'm curious.
Gap, Colombia?
It's a coincidence. Yep. I was just looking for a map of the Darien as well.
He introduced himself.
Robert.
Why are you so interested in the Darien?
And he said he was a journalist. The woman gave us a set of aerial photographs. They all looked the same. It was just green. With just trees.
Wow, that's going to be a big help.
You couldn't distinguish one from the other.
When were you thinking of going?
Next day or two.
I think both of us were trying to figure out if it was a good fit to go together. And so we agreed to meet up at his hotel. Already I was thinking about if we were going to travel together, how this would go.
I brought some maps of my own.
My plan was to kind of go unnoticed through the Darien. But he was traveling with another woman who was my age.
My friend Megan?
I'm like, she's blonde and 6 feet tall.
Hey.
At that point, I'm like, well, there's no way we're going to be sneaking through the Darien.
We're just trying to figure out the best route.
Okay.
I don't think Meg was so sure about me coming along, which is funny because I kind of have my own concerns about them. I think we were all a little interested in what we would encounter in the Darien.
We could run into some Colombian guerrillas in this area.
Yeah, right. The FARC.
I knew about the FARC. FARC stands for the Revolutionary Armed Force of Colombia. I was interested in what they were trying to do. There were people that, in my 21-year-old liberal arts mind, were taking direct action. I thought that they would change the way things were in Colombia. Poverty. It was romantic. Freedom fighters, yeah. There was a discussion about the potential of us being kidnapped. But I had to get to Colombia, and I was going to do it this way.
So, how do you feel about us all going together?
I said, yeah.
Let's do it.
We got in the boat, and there we were, headed into the Darien. There was really no thought to even if we belonged in that part of the world. That didn't occur to us. It was our trip. I didn't think there'd be any real severe consequences. Anything that I was going to get into, I felt like I could kind of get out of. I think we all felt that way. It could take all day to travel 3 or 4 miles. But we were definitely on our way. Robert had a GPS, but the GPS was tough in that part of the world. We tried to get our maps to gel with the GPS. We couldn't get the map to coordinate. It became very clear this type of journey was impossible without a guide. We went upriver all day, and we arrived at a native village, Capati. At that time, we met Victor. He saw us pull in.
Hello, welcome. Good morning, Mr.
Mark.
I liked Victor right off. He was really friendly.
Good morning, Miss.
Hi, how's it going?
I am single.
Older, early 50s. Victor kind of took us on a tour. We walked through the village. He showed us his house. We told Victor we were planning to cross the Darien into Colombia.
Colombia.
And that didn't seem like too big an issue for him. He talked about his experience guiding in the past. And he claimed to have contacts with the FARC, which was another relief. That's one less of a reason to worry with a guide that has contacts with the FARC.
That's great. What do you think?
Kind of won us over, you know.
Es un trato.
¿Ah, sí?
Sí.
Bien. No se van a arrepentir, ¿eh?
Ah, sí, sí.
Bien.
But before we could leave Capati with Victor, we had to meet with the Panamanian police. Capati was the final outpost on the Panamanian side.
Buenas.
It was a little garrison on the edge of the Darien. It was fortified. They had sandbag placements, machine gun placements. Clearly, they were protecting that part of Panama from something. We're going to have to somehow appease the police to let us through. we began this kind of negotiation.
¿Qué es lo que pasa?
We asked to leave.
No, no, no. Eso es imposible.
They told us it was too dangerous.
Para ustedes, los turistas, es muy peligroso.
¿Y por qué? ¿Por qué? ¿Cuál es el problema?
Problemas acá hay muchos.
They had all sorts of stories about what they thought was in the Darién. They mentioned drug trafficking. They mentioned the FARC.
No entienden.
And they sort of look to Victor and they look at me. Do you understand?
Hay la guerrilla.
Sort of, yeah. You know, guerrillas.
No pueden pasar.
¿Por qué? ¿Por qué?
We said, we're not going to go far.
Prepárense.
Finally, the commanding officer said that his commander was going to come and he was going to talk to us. All the soldiers grabbed their weapons and motioned to me. Let's go.
Sígame.
And they headed up to this hilltop. And that was the commander in his helicopter just coming in low right over the canopy. The helicopter landed. This officer jumped out. Blades are still spinning. Trotted over. He asked who Mark was.
Yeah, yes, Mark.
That was the Spanish speaker. I said, okay, that's me. And he was very brief. He said, the Panamanian police cannot ensure your safety in this region of the Darién. Do you understand the risks involved? I said, yes. He said, okay, good luck. And that was it. He shook my hand, got back in the helicopter and left. We felt great. Everything was back on track. Frankly, I don't think there was anything they could have told us that would have really deterred us from continuing.
Yes.
As it turned out, the Panamanian police were right, but not for the reason that any of us expected. No one really could have predicted what was going to happen next.
2 hours. It's going to take about 2 hours to get to the next village.
Leaving Capiti was phenomenal. It was happening. It was really happening. Victor negotiated a guide. We had a young boy that was our guide to the next village. Everybody was in a pretty good mood. Robert shot some video of us leaving.
These are like three different rivers that come together. This is a bridge.
We were on our way. We were hiking between like 10 to 12 hours each day. Portions of the trail were really slow. We had to cut through brush. They weren't well traveled. We'd walk in riverbeds for an hour, and then suddenly our guide would skirt off on a very small, almost like a game trail that you'd never spot on your own. We walked for almost 12 hours, coming into Pucuro. It was dusk, and we startled the people there. It was just a really rare occurrence to have people coming to the village. These young men came out. They had machetes. It felt really hostile. Yeah, I'm scared. I have no idea what they're gonna do. I don't know what's gonna happen. Are we gonna be beat? And it's just crazy. They were all in our face. There was dogs. Just unbelievable commotion. We're uninvited. We're in the Darién. We've left the police outpost, and all we really have is Victor. All I could think, stay with Victor. Stay with Victor. If anyone's gonna sort this out, Victor is gonna sort it out. Victor kept his calm and he walked directly to the chief's home. Obviously, they wanted to hear from us what we were doing there and what we were planning. Victor negotiated with the tribe.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
They gave us a cabin to stay in for the night. From that point, I think the trip, it changed a little bit. Now things are kind of coming into focus. We are in the Darien now. And things are going to only become more unexpected. It's not that we couldn't have turned around from there, but we limited our options for ourselves. It began to be, you know, not fun and games. Like, this is real. The next day, Victor negotiated guides for us. The plan was for the guides to take us as far as Paya, which was the last Panamanian village. In just a matter of days, we'd be inside Colombia. I certainly didn't think that we'd put the most difficult part of the trek behind us. We had yet to enter the border region, the real heart of the jungle, if you will. We hiked all day through the jungle. I remember Victor kind of laughing with the guides about the amount of water we were drinking.
¿Quieres una soda helada?
And then we did run out of water.
Run out.
At first it's like, wow, I'm really thirsty. I'd really like some water. And then it's, I really don't feel well, feel lightheaded. We need to find water soon. Eventually, we found a grove of green bamboo.
Miran, bambú, observen cómo sale el agua.
They would hack off part of the tree and then cut off the top, and you literally have like 6-8 ounces of water stored in the tree. It was like a tremendous relief. We hiked all afternoon, and that afternoon we arrived in Paya. Coming into Paya was much different than Pucuru because they were expecting us. We'd made it through the last stop before you cross the border into Colombia. That evening, we attended this tribal meeting. I can remember there was a group of young men that were kind of dancing in circles, playing their music, enjoying themselves. We ate fish and then rice and some bushmeat, iguana. You eat what's served. Yeah, and it was good. It was good. By that time, things were moving along pretty well, and we were able to negotiate with the chief for guides. I couldn't believe where I was. I felt incredibly fortunate. I felt like I was doing what I set out to do. We're there for a couple days. Victor told us that would be safer if we'd made contact with the FARC now rather than later. He told us that a local commander with the FARC would meet with us. We spent a whole day, we just hung out. But they never showed up.
No asomaron esos tipos de las FARC. No, no, no
asomaron. If the FARC had showed up, that would have been a huge relief. But that didn't happen. And the following day, we left. Leaving Paya, I knew we were close to Colombia. We were probably about a day or a day and a half from the border. Paya was our last village, and then beyond that, the serious part began. Hiking through the jungle is what you'd expect. Everything is sharp and pointy, or trying to eat you. I had a compass, but you can't just pick a direction and walk east. There's ravines and valleys. You could hike and bushwhack and bleed all day and cover just a couple miles and not really be any farther than from where you started. There'd be points where the guide would turn around and we'd go back the same way we came.
Muy peligroso, no podemos.
Sí, no podemos pasar.
Went off in another direction.
Está mal, está mucho palos, no podemos ingresar.
You don't have any line of sight and you're down under the canopy and you really don't have a sense even what direction you're walking. We camped at night and expected to be in Columbia the following day. I slept in my hammock. You kind of feel like a tuna in a net. I mean, it's just not very comfortable, and it's warm and there's bugs. All sorts of things going on at night, but it is loud. I think gradually I was starting to feel fatigued, not physically, but emotionally I was beginning to feel tired. Even in the times when things were going as well as they possibly could have, there was always an underlying fear of where we were and what we were doing. The next morning we woke up, we had breakfast. Right around noon, we decided to stop for lunch.
Oh no, they're really close.
And while we were eating, three men who we knew from Paya passed us. They were headed to the same village, and they were moving quite quickly. They had heavy bags, but they were moving much faster than we were. Exchanged pleasantries, and they were off. We knew we probably wouldn't see them again until we got there. So after lunch, we grabbed our stuff, and we got back underway. And slightly after that, we were up on a ridgeline. It was open. There was a storm that had come in and knocked down a lot of the trees, and we were kind of all picking our way through. And it was at that point where we heard the gunshots. They were very distinct.
Is that what I think it is?
They were farther up the valley, maybe a half mile or a mile away. They were just low bursts of fire. Boop, 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 boop. Boop, 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 boop. My heart's racing. I remember kind of having my own moment of anxiety, you know? At that point, our guides simply said that they weren't going to continue. And they dropped everything they were carrying, and they ran. There was no discussion. They were going back to Paya. End of story. In moments, they were gone, and Robert's gear and our food and everything were just on the trail.
Mark, are you okay?
And now it was Victor and Meg and Robert and myself. Before we could really talk about what we wanted to do and what our plan was, two of the men that had passed us early in the day showed up. One of them was bleeding, and they were completely terrified. Apparently they'd been cutting bamboo, and people had just started shooting at them. That's all they could say. And then one of them sort of showed where the third man had been shot, that they'd killed him. And they continued back to Paya, where our guides had just run off to. I was trying to delay panic. You know, I figured there'd be time to panic later on, but at this point we really just needed to figure out what we were going to do. I remember being quiet. I remember not really saying much. I just kind of went back into myself. This wasn't really my game. Robert was the one that suggested,
I think we keep going
toward the ambush.
It'll be safer than to turn back.
What about Victor?
We stay together.
Mark, are you happy with that?
I'm scared, but this was something I'd kind of hoped to encounter. A true, true, true test.
Okay, so we're all agreed.
It was that important to me that I could deal with whatever it was down the trail. There was a lot of internal monologue. I was thinking about the fact that maybe their first response was going to be to open fire. Robert suggested that we speak loudly.
Louder. Just say anything.
So they would have ample warning before we encountered whoever it was that had been shooting.
All right, where are we going, Victor?
Okay, all right.
Where are we going?
Hotel was one of his rooms.
I was kind of reaching a bit of a breaking point.
Louder.
I said, Mark, what kind of movies do you like?
Keep talking. Louder.
After maybe just 15 or 20 minutes, we made our way up to a bluff. And Robert, I think, actually said,
this would be a really good place for an ambush.
And four soldiers just materialized. They just stood up. Short hair, young, probably all in their early 20s.
Arriba las manos. Hola, maletas.
And I remember very distinctly that the soldier just directly in front of me had a green bandana and a single blue feather right in the middle, kind of striking.
Bajo las maletas.
Maletas. They're armed, pointed their guns at us. We had our hands up, and we took off our bags, and then we sat down. At that point, the soldiers were just immediately on the radios.
Se va, se va, se me copia. Encontramos unas personas.
¿Quiénes son?
Son desconocidos.
We were thinking they were the FARC. Victor was the one with the FARC contacts, and now we were going to fall back on Victor's relationship and then also Robert as a journalist.
¿Quiénes son ellos?
No, son turistas.
They wanted to kind of figure out who we were.
Tell them I'm a journalist.
Robert had articles, and he kind of wanted to like demonstrate to them that he actually was a journalist. But they weren't too interested in our story.
¿Has comido carne de tigre?
They started this casual conversation about tiger meat, tigre. And they asked Victor if he'd ever have tigre.
Tigre.
Victor said, yeah, it's very rich, it's very rich. And they said, yeah, we really like tigers. They said, tigers eat tigers.
Porque tigre.
You know, predators eat predators.
Come a tigre.
From there, they went on to say that they'd just seen a tiger. In fact, they'd shot at one in the jungle. And they kind of hinted at whether or not we'd heard the gunfire.
No.
We said no. We all had the good sense to keep our mouths shut. After about an hour waiting around, another group of soldiers arrived. Now there was maybe 30 or 40 soldiers, like right where we were. We don't know what the hell's going on. They separate us from Victor. Victor was nervous from the beginning, and I could kind of see it on his face. He was too far away to hear what he was saying, but he was talking to the squad commander. Eventually, Victor came back, and the squad commander launched into this speech about the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, the FARC.
Somos Fuerzas Revolucionarias de Colombia.
They were members of the FARC. They were there to protect the people of Colombia.
Estamos aquí para defender nuestro
and
territorio.
We listened.
Es una zona muy peligrosa.
When he was done speaking, Victor started speaking to me in English.
His name, I don't know.
He was trying to appear casual, but he was struggling. He was really trying to pick his words carefully.
Say again.
These men, no good.
He told me they didn't trust him, and he didn't know them, that he was worried. At that point, I was really confused. Victor didn't know who they were. They claimed they were FARC, but they were making up stories about shooting in the jungle. They haven't killed us, that's good, but it was another story now. How are we going to get out of this? And they wanted to see our maps. And they had some questions about Paya and who was there and what was there.
¿Dónde está el pueblo Paya?
No hay un camino así marcado.
They decided that they were going into Panama for themselves, but they needed a guide to retrace our steps.
Él se encontrará con ustedes en Turbo en unos días.
What did he say?
He says they want to take Victor with them to Panama.
There was a brief argument.
No, tell him there's no reason to take him into Panama.
No llevas nuestra guía. No,
we were pretty emphatic about it, but Victor didn't really say much of anything on his behalf. I think at that point he realized that things were beyond his control.
No llevas nuestra guía. No hay razón para...
I mean, we really pleaded with them, but they assured us. They said, it's not to worry. We're just going to secure the area. A situation that I put myself in. Decision after decision led me to this point of running into the FARC. This is almost exactly what I thought might happen. Did I not realize the seriousness of this? I was really worried. I was convinced Victor was probably dead. We more or less stayed put right where we were. They put us right in the middle of this group of soldiers. Maybe 20, so we slept surrounded. No one was gonna sneak off in the middle of the night. And I don't remember sleeping a lot that night.
That's it.
The soldiers, they would pull guard duty all night. Every couple hours, four or five soldiers would get up and go in and take posts, and four or five more would come back. I don't know what they wanted. I don't know what we would do if we were permanently held. To be so foolish as to just stumble across a border the way we did. Our ability to make choices ended once we walked down the trail.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling t-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/wondery today. That's shopify.com/wondery.
In the morning, they moved us. It was very warm, and there was a particular smell in the area. It could have been anything, but it smelled like death, that something had happened at that location. The two men that had run back and the third that had been killed, we saw their things. They were just kind of torn open, strewn apart. His body wasn't there. It was just the bags that the men had been carrying. But it felt like a body. Their things felt like a body. And at that point, we were kind of with this small group of soldiers, kind of made a camp there in the jungle, and we just waited. So I'm thinking, okay, so this is the FARC, the left wing, you know, the freedom fighters. They were young, really young, kids really, 16, 17, 18 years old. I wasn't an expert about the FARC, but I had some pretty pointed questions, kind of philosophical stuff. But any conversation that I tried to engage them with just didn't go anywhere.
¿Qué es eso?
¿Un iPod?
¿Qué es un iPod?
They were curious about Robert's iPod. They wanted to talk about music. They wanted to talk about their families.
¿Usted es mi madre?
The days continued to come and go. It became fatiguing. It was kind of wearing on my psyche. It became more and more serious because we weren't getting handed over. We would hear helicopters. You know, Black Hawks have like a really distinct sound to them, kind of real low, throaty. We'd all kind of look at it, but it's impossible for them to see us. We were certainly kind of under guard, but we weren't restrained. Our hands were never bound. We also really didn't talk about escaping. That was a step that I don't think we were prepared to even think about. There was opportunities. They were kind of careless with their weapons. They'd just leave them around. Sometimes they'd forget them. But then once you escape, where do you go? We didn't have provisions on us. Then we really would have been on our own. Frankly, we didn't have a lot of our own survival skills. Then that evening, another group of soldiers arrived.
You recognize those men?
They were the soldiers that went into Panama. They had heavier mortars, Russian squad machine guns. The commander that originally took, Victor, and reassures us that Victor is going to be coming along any minute. And they demand all of our electronic equipment. They took our media, our passports, everything we had. The level of anxiety, it's gradually building. It was like, grab your bag, get your stuff, we need to leave. As we were climbing out of this ridgeline, Robert and I began this conversation, which was basically, how do we really know these people are who they say they are? We thought if we were going to run into somebody, it would be the FARC. But I remember Victor was nervous from the beginning that he didn't really know who they were. When he left, he was really quiet. I'm certain he feared for his life. It's possible he was thinking they were the sworn enemy of the FARC, the paramilitaries. I knew there were rumors about them using chainsaws on people. I was familiar with the paramilitaries, the right wing, death squads. I was aware that their tactics are horrifying. They wanted support in the rural areas, and they were willing to do anything to get that. It was pretty rare that the paramilitaries would take people and then release them. Now, I have no idea what was going to happen next. We hiked all night. Moving at night, you just follow the soldier in front of you. You can't see anything. It just feels like it's never gonna end. Finally, we arrived at the village that was a kind of our original destination in Colombia. We come out onto this really large soccer field, and there's dozens of soldiers already sacked out on the field, and we just crashed. We're all beyond words, just so fatigued. I don't remember sleeping, I must have, but just a couple hours later, 4 or 5 in the morning, the soldier woke me up.
Levántese que tenemos que irnos.
There was about 6 soldiers. I didn't recognize any of them. These guys were older. They meant business, and they told us to get up.
Levántese.
Of course, at that point, it's just like, what, are you kidding me? Like, we hiked all night. We've only slept for a couple hours, and we're moving again.
Estás bromeando.
I'm waking up now, and I'm kind of realizing that this isn't probably the best situation. I don't know these guys.
Arriba, arriba, mueva.
They're not the soldiers that we kind of had a relationship with. It just becomes apparent that for whatever reason, they don't want us to be seen by anybody in the village. At this point, I'm consciously fearful for my life. They take us to a graveyard, to the Kuna burial site. It's outside the village. I look at Meg and I'm just like, what do you think? And Meg has this kind of like way of putting things. She's like, I don't know. She's like,
I think they're gonna do us.
I'm like, really?
I think you're right.
Like, that's exactly how I feel. I mean, like, is this it? Is this how it's gonna go down? And she's like, I don't know, that's what it feels like. They kept telling us they were gonna release us, and they never did. We've been in the jungle days. And now we're in a graveyard. They've took our media. So there's no evidence now. They have everything, they have us. We're gonna be shot. So we waited. And 4 or 5 soldiers showed up. And they took me by myself.
No tenemos tiempo. Levanta, que fue. Vamos.
Sí, la maleta, sí, la maleta.
Levanta.
And Meg was just like,
vamos, vamos, vamos.
She just said goodbye to me.
Goodbye.
They both said goodbye to me.
We'll see ya.
It was. I went with them. I left. Now I know what's gonna happen. They're gonna kill us. I don't know why, but they're gonna kill us. I kind of gave up at that point. I feel kind of, in a weird way, ready. I mean, maybe this is how it should have been. I mean, I'm back in Colombia, right? Things have kind of come around, you know? You always think you try to run, grab a weapon or something. But oddly enough, that wasn't on my mind. I just figured that they were gonna take me into the jungle and put me on my knees and put a bullet in my head. They took me out onto the riverbank. Most of the entire guerrilla detachment was right there. And another superior had showed up.
Tome asiento.
And they sat me down, like, right in the middle. And now it's just like, well, what's going to happen next?
¿Quieres un cigarrillo?
The commander offered me a cigarette, and we started this conversation about politics.
Vamos a hablar de política.
He wants to know what I think about the paramilitaries.
De los paramilitares.
Pretty certain they're not the FARC anymore. I told him what I thought about them.
Todos saben de sus.
I figured if they wanted to shoot me, they could shoot me.
Paramilitares.
I told them that the paramilitaries were probably the biggest problem in Colombia at that time. And I talked about the assassinations and the murders and the massacres.
Ellos son asesinos.
I just sort of gave him a piece of my mind.
Carniceros.
I think I probably was ranting.
Y es son la razón que Colombia está.
And partway through the rant, this commander kind of interrupts me.
Un momento. Te voy a ser honesto.
And pulls off his t-shirt and like, there it is.
Nosotros somos paramilitares.
We're paramilitary. The skull and crossbones is kind of their little tag.
Ahora, ¿qué piensas?
What do you think about that? He said, I take the cigarette now. I just run my mouth off. That was a big joke.
¿Puedes ver?
It became clear that they got instructions to play along with this FARC storyline. And the joke really was on me, but I laughed too. Once everybody kind of laughed at me, I kind of became convinced that they thought we were completely harmless. Robert and Meg were down the riverbank when they saw me. They were surprised to see me alive.
Eres libre. Puedes irte.
Tell us that we can go.
Sí, eres libre.
I almost couldn't believe it. The next day, there's some people here to pick us up. We thought it was going to be the Red Cross, but it was a Colombian priest and a nun from a convent.
Necesitan carro.
I hadn't really gotten time to really think about what had happened. I was still wound up. This like huge continuum of emotion. It was like dread and then relief. I felt like there was going to be a point where I would have to kind of dump all of the stress and anxiety I was feeling. But at that point, I was hanging in there, I think. I was hanging in there. We were out of the jungle, and we were definitely in Colombia. The U.S. Embassy sent this jet for us. And then, same day, they fly us to Bogota.
Straight down the hallway, please.
They sit us right down in the office, and they're just all ears.
So, we need to go through all the details of your trip.
They want to know everything.
All the details that you can remember.
At that point, the cracks are starting. I was starting to feel burnout.
I wanted to know more about your guide.
And there were a lot of questions about Victor.
Where did you meet him?
There were questions about how we'd met him.
He's one of the locals in Kapati.
What he'd done in certain situations.
Is he okay?
You haven't heard what happened?
It was then that we got the full story about what had happened after Victor left with the paramilitaries. They got Victor to lead them back into Panama. And when they got to Paya, there was kind of a celebration underway. For whatever reason, they didn't like the cooperation they were getting. The chief was killed by the paramilitaries. His son was left for dead. From there, they left Paya, and they went even deeper into Panama, all the way to Pucuru. I'm guessing if Victor wasn't convinced before that he was a dead man, he's absolutely convinced now. So, Victor escapes. Somewhere between Paya and Pucuru, this is like a 50-year-old man trying to outrun an entire squad of hardened, trained paramilitary soldiers in the jungle, and he outruns them. Warns the village, and by the time the paramilitaries show up, the village is empty. They looted, burned a couple of the buildings to the ground, and left.
They burned a couple of buildings to the ground and left. They took what they wanted, burned a couple of...
When I heard about what happened, I blamed myself. This was an act of terrorism. It was the first paramilitary incursion into Panama. Our guides were from Paya. There had been people killed. I mean, everything kind of fell away. The room started spinning. I just felt suddenly really horrible. I could just feel a fever coming on, and they asked me,
"Are you okay?"
I'm like, "No.
I need to lie down."
"Sure, right this way."
They sat me down, and this nurse came in, and she just said, "What happened to you?" I completely lost it. I just cried. It felt really good. I couldn't explain to her what had happened to me because I didn't know what had happened to me. But I'd made it to where I wanted to be. I was back in Colombia. That in itself was kind of overwhelming. Literally, I just had this day in Bogota, and that was it. I got a cab, and I went to their Central Park in the middle of the city. I walked, sat on a bench. I had more questions sitting on that bench than I did when I left. There had been people killed, and maybe it was our fault. Whether or not the paramilitaries would have gone into Panama without us is up for argument, but I felt responsible for what happened. Even 8 years later, I still think about it. I still think about the choices I made to take that trip. I'd gotten this idea in my head that I would personally pay any cost to cross the Darién, but in the end, I didn't have to pay it, really. Other people paid for it.
In June 2010, Mark Wedewin died in a climbing accident on Mount Rainier. This program is dedicated to his memory. Thank you for listening to Locked Up Abroad, exclusively on Luminary from Wondery, the network behind Dr. Death, Dirty John, and Business Wars. To listen to more great shows like Locked Up Abroad, visit luminary.audio and wondery.com. Locked Up Abroad was produced by Raw TV Limited for National Geographic Channels. Copyright 2010. All rights reserved. Distributed under license from Fox Networks Group Content Distribution UK Limited. Our audio adaptation is edited by Daniel Carissimi. Our producer is Donna Himes. Our executive producers are Marshall Louis and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.